Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Live from Liverpool, The Dark Paranormal, Season 21.
Hello everyone, and welcome back to The Dark Paranormal, Season 21, Episode 7. And today, we are going to take a look at one of the darkest cases that we've looked at this entire season. Today's experiencer gives us two stories, both of which leave us challenging everything we think we know. And to give a quick hint about the type of darkness we'll be entering into, today's show needs a trigger warning. Mentions of self-harm, suicide and murder are all within this episode. A very quick thank you to everyone who's reached out over the last week. Thank you all for your correspondence and your feedback. Don't forget you can always get in touch via contact@thedarkparanormal.com. If you have your own experience to share, perhaps for season 22, either click the link in the show notes or head direct to thedarkparanormal.com and click on Submit My Experience. Now, a quick mention that our patrons found out something that we will announce shortly over the next coming weeks, something very special indeed. And we are also taking a look at the format of The Dark Paranormal, as we do every now and again. And I can tell you that season 22 is going to be completely different from what we're used to. And I mean that in the best possible way. We've taken on board all of your feedback. We've went out to specific individuals with some questionnaires, and we hope to bring you a much better experience from season 22 onwards. Hopefully, we've addressed each and every concern that people have had about the show, and I'm really looking forward to delivering a sharp, sleek version of The Dark Paranormal for you all and myself to enjoy. But before we begin, very quickly, as you all know, I think our Patreon is the place to be for any paranormal enthusiast. There are no hierarchies, and basically it's a place of like-minded individuals who just like to debate, be them skeptic or believer, this wonderful topic of the paranormal. Now, when you decide to join our team over at Patreon, not only do you receive everything on this main feed, both ad-free and before anyone else, you can also gain full access to our Patreon-only podcast, Dark Bites, and that releases every single Sunday of the year and consists of many stories too short for our main episode. And now, all of those experiences sent in by our listeners have only been heard by our Patreons, and there are over 130 hours of these experiences in our back catalogue for you to go and binge at your leisure over on Patreon. And the best thing is, right now we're giving away a free week trial to our main tier on Patreon, which will give you full access to that back catalogue. Simply head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal and go and experience for yourself why I think it's genuinely the best place online for a paranormal enthusiast. Just like the following wonderful new team members have: Petra, Inda, GW Stevens, Dr. Stu, Andrew, Beth, Brian Jones, Leah, Peter Day, Surikin, Maddie 456, Jen and Jonah, Jack Starling, Leo Bryan, Arthur, Knight of Black, Modus Ponra, Heather, Supernormal, Tara Amin, and Hey Friend. Thank you so much, guys. I know I say it every week, but you genuinely keep the wheels oiled and this show rolling. Now, don't forget, if you can't join our Patreon just yet, don't worry about it. We all understand the world we're in, but you can still help the show by leaving a nice review, telling a friend, or sharing it on your social medias. Each and everything you do, even subscribing to the show wherever you're listening, that's free and something that can be done right now, and it helps us all. Genuinely, there's a huge impact by spending those 2 seconds right now just hitting subscribe. But whatever way you do help the show, I am massively appreciative of it and of each and every one of you. But if you do like the sound of joining that Patreon free trial week, head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. Now, on last week's episode, I did infer that this week we would step further into the darkness, and indeed we are. And we do so by reading out Tim's experience. So please, lower the lights, make yourself comfortable, and most importantly of all, leave your disbelief at the door, as we hear all about a demon of the night. Hi Kev, my name is Tim, and yes, that's my real name. I've no issue with everyone knowing this, because I'm prepared to stand by what I'm about to write against any scrutiny. I'm a 30-year-old truck driver from Texas here in the US. I will be providing aliases for others included within my experience for their own privacy. I've been listening to the show for around 2 years now, and it's my favourite thing to do while working or doing chores around the house. I would also like to say thank you very much for giving everyone a place to share the part of their lives they may have wished they hadn't gone through. It does help others, like myself, to feel like they're not alone with the things that sometimes wait in the dark. I've debated for a long, long time on whether or not to sit down and write this all out. I am hoping that maybe this will help me find some understanding about it all. To give a little background about myself, just to give you an idea of what my relationship with the paranormal is built upon, I was raised by a family with a balanced mixture of skeptics and believers. Some of my family could see an entity appear before their eyes and still refuse to accept it's possible, whilst others see every shadow as something paranormal. I myself am what I call a skeptical believer, as in, I will try to find a rational solution before entertaining any idea it may be something paranormal. I was also raised around a variety of religious views, most being one denomination or another of Christianity. Some of these were very focused on the literal effects of demons on mortals. I have a smaller experience to share before I get to the truly terrifying experience. I would often visit my aunt, uncle, and my cousin, who was more like a brother to me, really. Let's call my aunt Cindy, my uncle Johnny, and my cousin Billy. Well, they lived in a very old house that has now since been demolished and repurposed. My very first experience was within this house when I was a small child, though I remember it very well. As a child, I would often have night terrors, or vivid nightmares, that when I woke up, I would still believe were happening, or were in fact the true reality. These night terrors would often include sleepwalking, sleep talking, sometimes sleep screaming. One particular instance of this, I was sleeping in the downstairs room that was kind of a smaller secondary living room, along with cousin Billy. While sleeping, I heard a creak on the old real wood floors, and I looked out into the pitch black darkness of the room. In the immediate moment, I could not make out just what I was seeing, as it appeared to be some reddish glow. As I focused in on this, I noticed they were eyes. And I slowly noticed also that there was a silhouette of a human-like shape that I can only describe as being darker than the absolute darkness around us. Well, I froze, and I could literally hear absolutely nothing but the frantic beating of my own heart in my chest. I could feel ice in my veins. I kept staring at this shape without blinking, and then I noticed it had what looked like a stunted right leg that was roughly half the length of the other, complete with a clawed foot. It also had what I could only assume were horns of some sort, jutting out darkly from the top of its head. This entity and I just stared at each other for what felt like hours, but was probably a minute or so, until slowly it reached its clawed hand forwards and placed it on the inside of my thigh. Well, I screamed at this as I felt an intense burning pain where its hand sat. I quickly jumped up out of bed and I ran to where the adults were in the main living room talking. As I came rushing in, most had already heard my scream and were on their feet yelling, "What's wrong? Are you okay?" I was so terrified I could barely speak. I could only whimper, running round, holding my leg. I finally yelled out, "It burnt me! The monster burned me!" Quickly, my Aunt Cindy grabbed me up and started looking at my leg where I was holding it. She just gasped. So I looked down to see it for the very first time. And there was a bright red handprint, the size of a grown man's. A grown man's right hand, just where that entity touched my leg. Every last person in that room crowded around me and placed their hands on me and started praying for my protection from evil without a second's question nor hesitation. I could do nothing but stare at the mark because just before seeing that mark, I was starting to think this was just another night terror. But how does a dream leave a physical mark on me? After around half an hour of praying, the pain was gone. But that mark stayed for a few days, and my mother was called to take me home. My mum was an absolute skeptic, and questioned them on why they'd done this to me, blaming my uncle, her brother. Later, after weeks and weeks of begging my mum, she allowed me to go back to stay the weekend once more at their house. I talked with my Aunt Cindy and Uncle Johnny all about what happened, and they explained that they believed it was a demon. A demon who used my vivid night terrors to try and work its way in and scare me into submission, and that their prayers had chased it away. Even I don't know what to truly think of this one. Was it just a powerful dream? A dream that stayed with me all this time? Or was my aunt right about it being a demon? And it decided to choose a form that it knew would scare a small child. I read a study about the physical manifestations of dreams and how they can cause red marks to appear. Well, one thought they'd been harmed. But I just don't know if that feels right either. I've never had any other negative experiences in that house. A few odd noises I couldn't easily explain, and a visit from my great-great-aunt Mary. Years later, when I was 16 years old, I became involved in a terrifying experience that almost took the life of a loved one. I lived with my best friend, James, and his family when I was 16 for reasons I don't feel are relative to this experience. His mother, Sarah, was a sensitive. And by that I don't mean she was a medium and could see what others can't, but she could get feelings and sometimes sense if things weren't entirely normal. And she was often correct. James had a sister called Lucy, who was about 13 years old. She was a very lively and overall happy girl, who loved to be around James and I and generally annoy us, as most younger siblings do. But I thought of Lucy as my own little sister, and I would even refer to her as Sis, and she called me Bubba. When I moved in with them, they had recently rented this old house, and actually told me they had a resident ghost, a little boy who would very often move things and leave little handprints on the glass back door. I will give a very brief and salient layout of the house, as it will make things easier to understand later. The house was a two-story brick house. The upstairs portion consisted of just one room, James' sister's room. Her name is Lucy. Directly below her room was the room that James and I shared both at the far end of the house, far from everyone else. The stairs that went to Lucy's room led directly down into the large living room, with a glass back door almost right in front of the stairs. These stairs had a wall on one side, but on the other side was completely open with handrail. Sarah had various decorations hanging on hooks to draw attention away from these stairs. They should have covered all of the house. That's important to the experience. Sarah would often tell people of the ghost of the little boy, and would communicate with him often. She even called him Jimmy, and he even communicated back in his own way. If you ever spoke to him or of him in the living room, he would make things move right before your very eyes. Most commonly, an old-style lantern, one that hung from one of the many hooks in front of the stairs. It would start to swing lightly back and forth with no apparent cause. You could also often see the handprint of a small child on the glass of the back door, even though there are no small children in the house. Sarah would clean the handprint off every time, and she would jokingly scold him, saying things like, "Jimmy, we talked about this. The window cleaner isn't free." Things actually seemed fine in that house, with Jimmy never giving anyone any bad feelings. He just seemed like a normal, nice boy, who, for whatever reason, simply didn't want to leave.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at FreeStyleLibre.us.
For prescription only, safety info found at FreeStyleLibre.us.
Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a two-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10-1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details.
But things started to change with no apparent cause when Lucy started acting out, particularly angsty and moody, even more than normal for a teenage girl. She started to spend more and more of her time in her room. She was becoming angrier and simultaneously more depressed, day by day. And we were all becoming very, very angry. concerned about this change from seemingly nowhere, and of course, her well-being. Sarah would refuse to speak about it inside the house. But one day, when we all left to go out, she talked to James and I and told us that she noticed something other than Jimmy was in the house. Something or someone that made her skin crawl. And sometimes it took everything she had to not break out in tears for absolutely no reason. Lucy told us she didn't want to stay any more at this home because whatever it was, she plainly and simply did not want to acknowledge its very existence or give it a reason to stay, and told us that we should all do the same. So we continued life there, all going along and pretending that we couldn't notice the bad feelings all around the house, which of course we could. One day, whilst everyone was gone, I decided I would take a nap. And while I slept, I had the most vivid dream that I can still hardly make sense of, despite even years later still remembering it in full vivid detail. In this dream, I was sat on the couch in the living room, and I hear footsteps on the stairs. So I go to see if it's Lucy. Instead, I see what I can only describe as a child's face on what, to me, looked like a baby doll's body, slowly climbing up the steps. Obviously curious, I get up to follow this entity into Lucy's room, and it continues to lead me to her closet. There, inside, was a section of panelling screwed into the wall, but this entity moved it away from the wall, as if it was just leaned against the wall, as opposed to attached with screws. And behind this panelling was a small opening into a dark room. As I crawled through, I found an attic space filled with old junk, all covered in dust and cobwebs. As I begin to look around, several more of these doll children start to gather around me. I didn't feel scared. I felt like they didn't want to hurt me. But suddenly, I heard one speaking to me, but without its lips moving. Almost like you see telepathy in the movies or similar. And all it said was, "This is where I was." I woke up when I heard James come into the room, and I asked him if this house had an attic, to which he said, "No, just the one room upstairs. Why?" Holding back my panic and to appear calm, I told him about my dream, and we both just shrugged it off as maybe some kind of junk fuel dream. A junk fuel dream I just couldn't get out of my head. So one day, I took Lucy to one side, and I asked her if there was a panel in her closet. She simply said no, and that she barely ever used that closet, but didn't give a reason why. So, of course, I asked if I could just look into that closet so I could stop obsessing over this stupid dream. I went into Lucy's closet. I moved a few boxes back and forth, which she'd piled up on the floor. And I was shocked. There was a section of panelling, screwed to the wall, exactly like in my dream. I ran downstairs as quickly as I could, and I found Sarah, and I told her everything, my dream, the fact there was a panel screwed in the back of the closet. I asked, if not begged, if I could remove that panel to see what was behind it. Sarah paused, clearly thinking it over, and then said, "I feel like we should just ignore it. But at the same time, it's probably nothing. Surely you must have just saw the panel, maybe at a glance once, and that's why you knew it was there. but you simply don't remember. I nodded and agreed she was probably right, but I had to know for sure. So, with her permission, I found a screwdriver and I ran upstairs to Lucy's closet and turn by anxious turn, removed each screw and took the panel down. Looking behind, it was a dark room, and once I found a flashlight, I saw it was an attic. Exactly like the one in my dream, down to the last detail. No one there had ever seen it, and I couldn't rationalize how I knew it was there, let alone what it looked like inside, given I'd never seen it. Sarah quickly made me leave that attic space, and she immediately put that panel back, telling us to never, ever go near it again. Not only that, but to never speak of it again. She then started burning sage 3 times a week. She even called a local preacher to have him come in and bless the house. Be this coincidental or not, but shortly after, things started getting worse again. One day, Sarah was talking to Jimmy, the nice ghost boy, the one from the kitchen on the far end of the house. She wasn't hearing or seeing anything from Jimmy, until she heard a loud bang from the living room. She goes to look and sees that that lantern that swings by itself when Jimmy's around had now swung off the hook and broken onto the floor. That wasn't possible, because you see, this hook had been bent with pliers to make it completely closed, so that couldn't happen. It was not too long after that that Sarah knew some local paranormal investigators and inquired if they would be willing to come by to check the house out. As someone with a very, very healthy caution of anything that far from my control, I made the decision to stay a few nights with another friend, whilst these paranormal investigators done their thing. So this part is very much second-hand knowledge. But I was told that with their various bits of detecting equipment, they detected 3 lingering human spirits and 1 non-human entity. Naturally, this made us all very uncomfortable. But Sarah asked her investigator friends what we should do, and they showed her a different cleansing ritual. They said this one should banish the non-human spirit from the home. So Sarah asked politely that everyone leave the house while she performed this ritual. So we did just that, deciding to go and hang out at a local park just for a few hours. When we got back to the house, there was a clear and obvious change in the whole atmosphere. It did feel like it used to. Even Lucy seemed back to her normal, happy self. However, Kev, I should warn, this next part does contain a brief mention of attempted suicide. After a few months, I moved out of that house, having turned 17, and I was able to sign a lease to get my own place. I stayed on pretty regular contact with James and his family, and they said everything had remained normal. That was until one night when I received a phone call that Lucy had had an episode and harmed herself badly. I will not go into details about exactly what happened, as to not show any disrespect to those involved, who I am sure do not want to relive this tragic moment. I will say that Lucy had started to become moody again and began spending most of her time alone in her room, just like before. When she was asked about this incident after everything was over, she said she had no memory of doing it, and she didn't even know why she would. The family soon relocated to another house, and Lucy returned to her normal self. And all of those bad feelings seemed to disappear. Later on, I talked with Sarah about it, and she told me that she'd done some digging into the history of that house. And it turns out, a family lived there in the 1940s. A regular run-of-the-mill white picket fence suburban family. And the father of this suburban family, one night, got a gun, killed his wife, his eldest child, and then turned the gun on himself. The youngest child, a boy, hid in the attic and was later found dead. The report said that he died of dehydration from hiding there too long without food or water. I have some theories about this experience. Was the non-human entity responsible for the incident in the 1940s and just stayed there? Were the investigators mistaken and the spirit of the father is what they thought was the non-human entity? I'm not sure if I will ever know for sure, but I know that every time I drive by that house, I feel uneasy to this day. For Kev, I will provide you the location of the house of the second experience. I also done some digging, but never found anything of note. I understand you're a busy man, but if you ever get curious and look into it, I'd love to hear of anything you find. Thank you for everything you do. I am and always will be a huge fan. Best wishes, Tim. Well, Tim, I know that you've sent this experience in rather recently, but as we all know by now, The Dark Paranormal is a fluid show. And by that, of course, I mean if I believe a story or experience comes through that I A, believe, and B, want you guys to hear as soon as possible, I will move shows around to allow you guys to hear what I've already read. Because if something excites me, I know it will excite you. And this experience, on several different levels, has me almost buzzing as a paranormal enthusiast. Believe me, Tim, I could wax lyrical about theories regarding this experience for the next 30 minutes, but I'll pick out a couple. So firstly, it's quite evident you have some sort of psychic gift. These dreams, or maybe not dreams, especially if you have a red handprint, adult size, on your thigh following a dream, that, to me, says that's not just a dream. I'm sure we can all agree with that one. Secondly, your dream about the attic space you've never heard about before, never witnessed before, yet, when you investigate, it's exactly how you dreamt it. And who led you there? A small child with a doll's body. And then Sarah uncovers that a child died in there after its father committed a murder-suicide. Of course, we all know by now about the idea of stone tape theory, how strong emotions can imprint themselves onto the surroundings, and realistically, you probably can't get much more of an emotive experience than that. And secondly, I will say I 100% agree with you that this non-human entity will have been responsible for that murder-suicide in the 40s and for what eventually went on to affect poor Lucy. Because, as we all know, I've been into the paranormal since my mother and I began discussing it around the age of 7. And after she died, I continued that and I would get my hands on anything I could, and I would watch or listen to anything also to do with the paranormal. It was my mother who got me the Amityville book by Jay Anson. Now, as I grew older into my later teens, I then looked into the Ronald DeFeo murders. Now, despite what you may think about the Amityville haunting, one thing which is obviously totally true is the fact that Ronald DeFeo did shoot to death 6 of his family members. But here's the interesting thing. After denying ever being there or being responsible, one of his initial confessions was that a spirit in the house told him to commit the murders. Now, if we use that, and it will all become clear why, as point one. Point two, when the police investigated forensically, they discovered the rifle that was used could be heard up to 3 or 4 blocks away, as it was a high-powered rifle. But neighbours, metres away, heard nothing, despite a number of shots ringing out in the dead of night. Let's call that point two. Point three is all of the members of the family were found face down in their beds. There was no attempt to wake up. And again, when they checked for drugs in their system, there were none. Even though the noise of those shots would have at least woke up one of those individuals to go and see what the noise was. But they were all found face down in their beds, which implies they didn't hear the shots, just like their neighbours. So, point one, a spirit told him to do it. Point two, nobody, even the neighbours next door, could hear the shots, several shots, from a high-powered rifle, even though they were metres away in the dead of night. And number three, no one in the house moved, meaning they didn't hear the shots, and they were all found shot, lying face down in their beds, not moving, i.e. not hearing a single sound. Now, interestingly, on this same documentary, which was on the Discovery Channel at the time, Lorraine Warren, who I have a bit of a touch-and-go kind of mental relationship with, and their story, shall we say, or experiences, and if anyone needs any reason as to why, look up the Enfield case and how long they actually spent at Enfield. But, of course, they got a full movie out of it, despite the main investigator being Maurice Gross. Anyway, Lorraine Warren had a Talking Heads piece on this show where she said a very interesting thing, that evil can cloak sound. And she meant it not as in an evil human spirit, she meant as in an entity of evil has the power to cloak sound when these things are being carried out. And you may think, we understand, Kev, we know about Amityville, we know about Ronald DeFeo, why are you saying this? Well, the point is this. A few weeks later, on the same Discovery Channel, there was an English programme named Cops That Kill. And it focused on this particular episode about a policeman from down south who lived in a terraced house, meaning houses adjoining either side, and he shot his wife and child and then hung himself. Now, when the police eventually broke into the house and found all three bodies, there was a note from the man who said a spirit told him to do it. He'd used a hunting rifle, which could be heard over 3 streets away, but neighbours literally adjoining the house didn't hear a single shot fired, even though the shots were carried out around 2 a.m. And finally, the house was split into 3 floors. The first floor you would walk in through the front door, which had the living room. The second floor had the child's bedroom. And the third floor had their bedroom, as in the mum and dad's bedroom, with a bathroom attached. And again, both bodies, the child and the mother, were found face down in bed. The mother had made no effort to get up and investigate the massive bang coming from her young daughter's bedroom. Again, as if, like her neighbours, she couldn't hear the shot. Toxicology reports also shown she had no drugs in her system. And maybe it was because I watched these two programmes in quick succession that the similarities of the cases jumped out to the point where I was genuinely terrified. Because in my imagination, there was this entity that was capable of being anywhere in the world it needed to be to make people do absolutely abhorrent things. But I'd like to say that's because I was in my late teens, but I still hold that belief now. But Tim, genuinely, thank you for giving us one of, I think, the best experiences that we've had this series. And if anyone out there has their own theories on what took place, please do let us know. In the meantime, Thank you all for joining me on your show, The Dark Paranormal. Don't forget, we have that free week offer of joining our Patreon at the highest tier so you can gain full access to our back catalogue of over 130 hours of Dark Bites episodes. And again, just click the link in the show notes or go to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. But right now, I'm off to ponder, as I'm sure many of you are, Tim's excellent experience. So, until next time, stay safe, take care, and remember, whenever you discuss the paranormal, always leave some of your disbelief at the door. And I'll catch you next time, right here, on The Dark Paranormal.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.